Hi, everybody. This is Ryan, Laura, Lincoln, and Lucy Dobson.
Ho, ho, ho.
We're wishing you all a Merry Christmas.
And a very blessed 2016.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Today on Family Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Christmas Eve edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and on today's program, we're continuing our Best of the Best series with excerpts from this year's National Day of Prayer. As many of you longtime listeners know, my mom, Shirley Dobson, has been the chair of the National Day of Prayer since 1991. In the many years she's served in that position, I've heard so many great speakers. But the two we're going to hear today especially impressed me. I know many of you felt the same way because this was one of our most frequently downloaded programs of the year. The first speaker is 2016 presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson. Dr. Carson is literally dripping with accolades and accomplishments, including the highest civilian honor given in the United States, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. But on today's Best of the Best broadcast presentation, Dr. Carson shares a simple but powerful message about how prayer has shaped his life and shaped the life of our great nation. Let's listen now.
Thank you so much. Candy and I are absolutely delighted to be here. It's been a very inspirational program, and particularly, you know, the day of prayer, talking about prayers, because they've played such an important role in my life. You know, my mother was a prayer warrior, and she didn't have much in the way of education, but she believed that God was the answer to any problem, and I was a terrible student, and she just had come from a very, very large family in rural Tennessee, got married when she was 13, sometime later discovered her husband was a bigamist, had the job of trying to raise us by herself, and it was going to be very difficult with a third grade education, but she was most distressed by the fact that I was this horrible student. And my brother was pretty bad too, and she just didn't know what to do, so she prayed. And you know, that's the wonderful thing about God. You don't have to have a PhD to talk to him. You just need to have faith. And she had faith that God would give her the answer. And he did, at least in her opinion. My brother and I didn't think it was all that wise. But, you know, turning off the TV and making us read two books apiece every week and submit to her written book reports, which she couldn't read, but we didn't know that. And, she was one of those mothers. Remember that woman you saw in the Baltimore film who went out and got her son? Yeah, that was my mother, okay. So you had to do it, okay? There was no social psychologist saying let the kid express themselves. So, and I started reading those books, and I'll tell you, learning things. It got to the point where I enjoyed reading the books, because I knew stuff that nobody else knew. Plus, we were desperately poor. But between the covers of the books, I could go anywhere. I could be anybody. I could do anything. And it was incredibly liberating. And within the space of a year and a half, I went from the bottom of the class to the top of the class. And you would have thought that maybe life was going to be great, but wrong. Because then I ran into another big problem. It was always there, but it was getting worse. It was my temper. I had a horrible temper. I was one of those people who thought they had a lot of rights. If you know anybody like that, you know people are always infringing on their rights and they're always getting angry. So I was, you know, I'd go after people with baseball bats and rocks, and hammers. And when I was 14, somebody angered me. And I had a large camping knife, and I tried to stab him in the abdomen. And fortunately, under his clothing, I had a large metal belt buckle, and a knife blade struck with such force it broke. And he fled in terror, but I was more terrified than he, recognizing that there I was, trying to kill somebody over nothing. And I locked myself in the bathroom, and I just started contemplating. I said, you know, you've turned your life around academically, but you're never going to realize your dream of becoming a doctor with a temper like that. And I can't control it. And I said, if he had not had that belt buckle on, I would have been on my way to jail or reform school. And I fell on my knees and I just prayed. And I said, Lord, I can't control my temper. And I'm never going to be successful. and life is going to be horrible for me, and I'm going to be jail, reform school, or the grave unless you do something. And there was a Bible there, and I picked it up, opened it to the book of Proverbs, and there were all these verses about fools. It seemed like they were all describing me. But there are also all these verses about anger, like Proverbs 19:19, there's no point getting an angry man out of trouble. He's just going to get right back into it. But Proverbs 16:32, mightier is a man who can control his temper than the man who can conquer a city. Verse after verse, chapter after chapter, it seemed like they were all written about me. I stayed in that bathroom for 3 hours. And during that time, I came to the understanding that to lash out at somebody was not a sign of strength, but a sign of weakness. It meant that you could be controlled by others and by the environment. And I also came to understand that getting angry all the time is a sign of selfishness, because it's about me, my, and I. Somebody offended me, somebody's in my space, you know. And if you could just learn how to step outside of the center of the circle and let it be about somebody else, you could completely maintain control. And when I walked out of that bathroom after 3 hours, the temper was gone. And I've never had another problem since that day. Never had another one. And I adopted God from that day forward, not only as my heavenly Father, but as my earthly Father. Somebody you could go to for wisdom to lead your daily life. But that wasn't the end of my problems. You know, I did very well academically. I won a scholarship to Yale. I thought I was pretty hot stuff, you know, Yale University from Detroit. I was pretty cool. Until I got to the end of that first semester and I was failing chemistry. That wasn't so cool at all. And you can't be pre-med and fail chemistry. And we were right there the day before the final. And my grades were so bad that even if I had gotten an A on the final, I still would have failed. That's how bad it was. But the professor was either very compassionate or very sadistic. I'm not sure which one, because he had a rule. He said, anybody who's failing, I'll give them double credit on their final. So you had like that one last burst of hope before you went down. And so there I was, night before, thinking about my life. I said, Lord, medicine is the only thing I ever wanted to do. I always thought that's what you wanted for me. And yet, it looks like I'm going to fail chemistry. I'm not going to go to medical school. I said, so would you please tell me what it is you really want me to do? Or alternatively and preferably, work a miracle. And I picked up that big chemistry book. I was going to learn the whole thing that night. And of course, I fell asleep. Dreamed I was in this large auditorium, just me and a nebulous figure working out chemistry problems. And I awakened early in the morning. That dream was so vivid in my mind. I picked up my book. I started looking up the stuff that I dreamed about. And when I went to take the test the next morning, it was like the Twilight Zone. I opened that book and I recognized the first problem as one of the ones I dreamed about. And the next, and the next, and the next. And I aced the exam and, you know, got a good mark in chemistry. It worked out okay. But and I promised the Lord he would never have to do that for me again, and that I would learn how to be a good student after that. But, you know, I did really begin to understand early in my life the incredible power of prayer and our connection to God, and what a difference it made throughout my entire medical career. I mean, if somebody had sat me down in front of a computer and said, I want you to type out the career that you want to have in medicine, I could not have come up with a better scenario. all these once-in-a-lifetime cases, one after another, incredibly complex things. One of the operations, Time Magazine said it was the most complex surgical procedure in the history of mankind. But not for one moment do I believe that it was me. It was him. It was him all along. And I learned early on, and that's why I said to God early in my career, you be the neurosurgeon and I'll be the hands. And that's the way we have to lead our lives. God is always looking for people who will allow him to use them. And what happens to most people is they get the big hit and he has to move on to somebody else. And see, I'm lucky because I know me. And I know I can't do all these things, but I know who can. And if you believe what it says in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. And that way, you don't have to listen to all the people who say, oh, you can't do it. Oh, nobody's ever done it. If I listened to all those people throughout my life, I wouldn't be standing here in front of you today. We don't have to limit ourselves to what man says is possible. All we have to do is listen to the Spirit of God. And the Spirit of God has been so vital in this country, in the establishment of this country. You know, during the Battle of Monongahela, during the French and Indian War, George Washington was a courier for General Braddock. And all the couriers going back and forth between the lines were killed. Washington had two horses shot out from beneath him. He had four bullet holes in his coat, but no flesh wounds. And some years after that war, one of the Indian chiefs who was involved, he was very elderly, ready to die, and he heard Washington was going to be in the area still before he became president. He had his men take him to the area. He said, sir, I had to meet you because I was in that war. I was one of the chiefs, and I'm an expert marksman, and I shot you several times. And my men shot you several times. And after a while, I just told them to stop wasting their bullets. And before I died, I wanted to meet the man protected by the great spirit above who would become the father of a great nation. And you know that story used to be in American history books until 1935 when PC said it had to take it out. And think about the Battle of New York. Washington was down to his last battalion. It looked like the war was over. He was surrounded by sea. General Howe had him surrounded by land. It was the end. Meteorological records say a dense, mysterious fog fell that night, and it shielded his exit. And he and his men got everything that could float, and they floated off Long Island to safety before the fog lifted. Now, some people say that that's a coincidence. I don't think so. And all you have to do is really look at some of the writings of George Washington and some of the other founders. You know, a lot of people who like to rewrite history said they didn't believe in God. Not really. They were deists. I don't think deists would have written the kinds of things that they wrote. You know, why would they write something like, our Constitution is made for a moral and religious people and is unfit for any other type of people if they were deist? I don't think so. And in 1787, at the Constitutional Convention, when the whole thing was about to fall apart, because the small states and the large states had different ideals of what should be done. They couldn't agree on anything. And the elder statesman, Benjamin Franklin, 81 years old, stood up in front of that whole assembly and said, gentlemen, stop. He says, during the revolutionary days, every other word out of your mouth was God save us. And now you don't even want to talk about God. He said, let us get on our knees and let us pray to God for guidance. And they all knelt, that whole assembly, and they prayed, and they got off their knees, and they put together a 16 and a third page document known as the Constitution of the United States, which is one of the most admired documents of government in the history of the world. And that was the beginning of the tradition of starting each congressional session with prayer. And if only we understood that, and if only we truly believed. But it is up to us who are the true believers now to stand up for what we believe, to have the courage and the faith to believe that God will get us through this difficult period. Part of this difficult period we're in is because we have refused to stand up. We want to be liked. We don't want an IRS audit. We don't want people to call us names. You know, don't want anybody to mess with our job. But what about the people who came before us? What were they willing to do? What were they willing to give up? And now, the baton of freedom is in our hands. We have to make the decision. What are we willing to stand up and do to protect the future of our progeny? Thank you, and God bless.
Oh, what a great reminder of how prayer brings hope to hopeless situations. Another place where prayer has brought hope and change is the plight of Romanian orphans. In this next segment, John Gibson, longtime family friend and Family Talk board member, and his wife of 38 years, Mary Lois, sat down with my dad at the National Day of Prayer to discuss the work they've been doing for Romanian orphans and their hope for the future of those children.
These are godly people that just love him and are trying to serve him. And they are leaving tomorrow night for Romania.
Yes.
And why would you go to Romania, of all places?
It's your fault, Jim.
My fault.
It's your fault. Because over the years, I keep seeing your heart for the family. And I see your heart break when the family is destroyed. In Romania, there are... The government acknowledges 70,000 children that are being warehoused, orphans. We know the number is over 100,000. And I think of what William Wilberforce said, and that is, you can turn and look away, but you can never again say that you did not know. It's one thing to quote that there's 100,000 of these kids, but Mary Lois and I have held these babies. We have seen these boys. I did high fives with them in a warehouse. I mean, it's horrible. And so we're going over there. By the grace of God, we've been fighting with the legislature for 3 years. By the grace of God, we're taking on the biggest task of our lives, and that is to change the government policies, to wake up the church, and to unite all those in Romania using social media if possible, to free 100,000 kids. And
Mary Lois, take them out. Yes. Tell us what John has not explained. What are those babies going through? What is that like? What are those 70,000 babies experiencing? You go over there, you change diapers, you feed them, you see them. What is that like? And how do you come home and ever be the same again?
You're not. You can't come home and never be the same again. But it's a good thing. We have an almost daughter that we kind of sort of adopted, who with a German friend, they both ended up there not really knowing what God was going to have them do, but knew that they had to be there. And they had a heart for kids. Romania closed their orphanages in order to join the EU because the EU said, well, you have an orphan problem you have to solve. And they said, okay, no problem. And they just shut all the orphanages and then see, we don't have a problem anymore. And so these girls were wondering, where did they go? And they found the babies in the children's hospital. That's the 0 to 2 year olds. And many, many, many of these babies are just abandoned. The parents can contact a health care provider, and an ambulance will come and take the baby to the hospital, or a mother can give birth and leave the hospital without the baby and never come back. And so these children did not
even...
Do they
let them die?
Probably. They're just not there.
They don't take care of them.
They do not take care of them. The hospital was way overloaded. It couldn't really take care of them. It didn't have the facilities or the funds. And so when the girls went in the hospital, the babies did not even cry. It was that bad. So they started buying diapers with their own money. And to make a very long story of 12 years shorter, the whole hospital has been transformed, including the staff. Volunteers come from all over the world, both short-term and long-term, to change diapers, play with the babies, play with the toddlers who have no place to go, even if they're
and
well.
Otherwise, nobody talks to them.
That's right.
They just stand there in filthy, filthy, dirty diapers.
Unspeakable.
And even to feed them, they lean a bottle
just up. Prop it
nobody
up.
Even holds them while they feed them.
So part of our big concern is these children have to be declared adoptable in less time than it's taking them the 4 or 5 years to do it.
And when I last testified in a Senate hearing saying you've got to change the law so these kids can be adopted, and the gentleman who headed up adoption for the country stood up and said, it is impossible to have a child ready for adoption in less than 2 years. The separation anxiety, all the issues are so complex by that time, and it makes us angry.
And they never get over that.
That's right.
If you don't talk to babies, terrible things happen to the brain.
Exactly. This is a task that's so big that we know that God has the uncomfortable habit of putting his hand on unqualified people, and I'm one of the unqualified. We are. It can only happen by the grace of God. We're going to build an army of people in Romania who will stand up and say, it's time to make a change.
Why are you doing this? You've got a family. You have all of your own responsibility and your business.
Why?
Yes. Yeah. And another grandkid on the way.
Why are Very you simple. Putting yourself through this?
More and more, I am seeing that the heart of God is for the orphan. And the reality is, we're all orphans. We've been adopted by Jesus Christ. And these orphans deserve better. And if no one speaks out, they will live a life of hell.
A great many of these children are gypsies, and that's part of the cultural challenge.
They're thought of as worthless.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Many of the kids in this hospital come from a particular gypsy village. And in that village, we now have a kids club for the preschoolers. We now have an after-school program that is serving over 100 children. We have teen group mentors. We have one girl who is our poster child, who is in her first year of college, and she is the first one in the history of that whole village to ever have gone past the eighth grade. And that is inspiring other young people to say, if I promise to work hard, will you help me too? And so pray for the kids that are struggling to make different choices and really find a Lord that is alive and working with them.
And folks, without this intervention, the girls get to be, if they survive,
that's the worst part,
get to be about 14, 15, and they're turned out. They leave whatever they call an orphanage, the hospital. They leave out on the street. That's only one way for them to earn a living.
That is the most disgusting part. Because in government, when something isn't happening that should, follow the money. And I think it's sex trafficking.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you for sharing this. And our hearts break with yours.
For 64 years, the National Day of Prayer has been built on one foundational truth. Prayer changes things. When we call out in prayer, nothing is impossible for God. That's true for nations, organizations, and even individuals. nothing is too big or too small for God to handle. So if you're struggling with anything, Family Talk is here for you and we want to help. Call us at 877-732-6825 and we would be honored to pray with you. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, Merry Christmas, and be sure to join us tomorrow for a powerful Christmas program about the eternal significance of the birth of Christ. God bless. We'll see you then.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family. We've selected 18 of the most popular broadcasts of the year and presented them together on 6 audio CDs in the 2015 Family Talk Best of Broadcast Collection. Request your CD set as our thank you for your suggested donation of $50 or more to support the ministry of Family Talk. Your gift today will be doubled by a generous matching grant, 877-732-6825, or visit drjamesdobson.org.